from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action. It's my privilege to be sitting in for Tony Perkins today on this Friday edition. Well, in a senatorial subcommittee hearing this past Wednesday, Senators Ted Cruz of Texas and Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee held big tech's feet to the fire for their censorship of conservative speech online. I'll feature some of the compelling audio and talk with Chris Gasek, FRC Senior Fellow on Regulatory Policy. In my second segment, I'll talk about Steve and Bridget Tennis, family farmers from Michigan who just wanted to sell their produce at a farmer's market without being required to get into the same-sex marriage business. Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel John Bursch joins me to talk about their new case. At the bottom of the hour, I'll talk with Maria Keffler, an Arlington, Virginia public school parent who objects to the transgender ideology being foisted upon elementary school children. She wrote a recent and compelling op-ed column in the Washington Post, insisting that parents have a right to determine what their children learn with regard to sexuality and gender. And then in our last block, I will talk to David Horowitz, the author of a new book entitled Dark Agenda: The War to Destroy Christian America. As a reminder, you can find the podcast online, TonyPerkins.com, and follow Tony on Twitter, at T. Perkins. You can also follow me, if you're so inclined, at Sarah P. Perry. Well, Republicans this week, led by Senate Ted Cruz on Wednesday, confronted Facebook, Google, and Twitter executives over allegations that they censor conservative users and content online, and went so far as to threaten regulation in response to claims that Democrats have long described as a hoax and a distraction. The tensions played out over more than 3 hours at a Senate hearing where Cruz, who was the leader of the Judiciary Committee's Constitution-focused panel, pointed to reports that he said showed a consistent pattern of political bias and censorship on the part of big tech. Joining me to unravel this puzzle and discuss the hearing and its implications are our conservative counterparts here in this discussion, Chris Gasek, FRC Senior Fellow on Regulatory Policy. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be here.
So, Chris, the Daily Signal wrote a piece called Six Topics from the Senate Hearing on Censorship by Big Tech. And in it discussed Senators Ted Cruz of Texas and Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, both of whom have been very vocal about their efforts to push back on what is a clear trend of censorship by big tech in social media platforms. So I'd like to feature an audio clip, a very compelling one, Senator Cruz asking Carlos Monge Jr., the director of public policy for Twitter, to defend its censorship of a Susan B. Anthony tweet featuring, get this, Mother Teresa's quote that said, quote, abortion is profoundly anti-woman. Let's listen here.
It's not just political, it's also ideological. There have been multiple instances of, in particular, pro-life groups being disfavored. For example, here is a tweet that says abortion is profoundly anti-woman, and it's a quote from Mother Teresa. And this tweet was blocked. And now it is fairly remarkable that Mother Teresa is now deemed hate speech. Do either of you agree with the proposition that Mother Teresa is issuing hate speech?
If I could take a step back from that, I believe that that account is from the Susan B. Anthony list.
Correct.
And Susan B. Anthony is currently an advertiser in good standing on our platform. Last promoted.
Mr. Manji, you're very good at not answering questions. Is this hate speech?
Every tweet has context behind it, and every decision that's made has context.
Tweet. There's no more context.
I can tell you that we have actioned accounts on both sides of this debate.
Now, let's talk a little bit about big tech's bias against abortion. This seems to be a hot button issue that comes up repeatedly in the course of social media discussions. And we have heard many times before about particular instances addressing abortion, including, not the least of which, was Senator Marsha Blackburn's approach toward her Senate campaign, in which she ran an ad on Twitter discussing how she had led efforts to investigate Planned Parenthood. But recently, the movie Unplanned was released in theaters, and on a more timely topic, Chuck Konzelman, who was the writer and director of the pro-life movie Unplanned that opened just 2 weeks ago, did tell the Senate panel about obstacles in marketing the movie on Google and Twitter. And in fact, the movie itself mysteriously disappeared from Twitter for apparently a brief period of time. And the majority of those who were following the account disappeared. The number was reduced from something on the order of 200,000 to less than 200. So these individuals were unilaterally unfollowing without their knowledge, without their decision, which was a 1,000-to-1 reduction in listed followers. But then Konzelman went on to talk about Facebook. Now, Facebook, interestingly, he said, on the social media platform, has been an atmosphere in which their exposure has really exploded. He said that the film's Facebook site had something in the order of about 12 million trailer views. So between the platforms, we find that Facebook tends to trend more in a direction we would like to see, expanding the notion of free speech and the acceptability of speech. So Monhi, who was the Twitter executive, said the problem with Unplanned occurred because of a glitch in the automated system, right? And this was why all of these individuals suddenly unfollowed the Unplanned movie on Twitter for a period of a significant number of hours, the weekend that it debuted, no less. So do you, Chris, buy the explanation that this was some kind of a technical glitch in an automated tracking system that suddenly shut down dialogue on Twitter over the Unplanned movie?
You know, it's one of the things I find in this, you know, all these hearings, and, you know, there's so many cases of, you know, using Twitter and all of these social media platforms almost constantly. I mean, you know, it's just nonstop by all groups. And so when you get an example of something going horribly wrong, you sort of instinctively say to yourself, well, it was a one-off, right? It was just a, you know. And I think one thing that strikes me is, you don't hear about the left experiencing what I kind of think of as like sand in the gears almost constantly, right? You know, it's something happens or there's something like this movie, and it's just there's all this friction, right? You have to work your way through the thing disappearing for hours. And I remember over Christmas, I don't remember which platform it was, but Franklin Graham was like taken off. Do you remember this?
Yes, I do.
So this is like right around Christmas. I guess, you know, nobody wants to see what Franklin Graham has to say at Christmas, right?
Right.
You know, and you kind of think there are like these little trolls in there sort of doing this. Or you know, I wish, you know, one of the things that would be interesting because, look, I mean, they do have problems that they have to deal with in terms of like terrorists using their site and putting, you know, like the shooter in New Zealand and things like this. So if they get, you know, sort of alarms about things, they kind of, I think they may overreact to this kind of stuff and, you know, you'll take stuff down and these sorts of things. So you're subjected quite possibly, if you're the movie, to attacks, right? And it would have been interesting to find out more about that. But I think there definitely is a sort of a, you know, especially with Twitter, which seems to be far to the left of Facebook and Google wasn't there, but we heard about with the movie, you know, Google just wouldn't even take ads. So that's just pretty terrible, and I think YouTube is also very problematic. But Facebook is seeming to kind of get a better grip on the need for free speech. But I think there are just a lot of issues, right? One of them is we don't want Pakistan determining the free speech standards of the United States. You know, not that, you know, Pakistan isn't has great mountains or something. But, you know, it's not – when we – you know, we are the country that pioneered this, maybe along with the British, and the whole idea of free speech. And our values should be prevailing in this. And I think in this area, though, you see a lot of bias that is inherent in these companies. They are not pro-life. The people in the companies are not pro-life, and they are not happy about putting this sort of stuff up. And they're going to do everything they can in this sort of passive resistance, right?
Well, and Zuckerberg himself has testified that Silicon Valley trends overtly to the left. He made no bones about that. So even though Carlos Monhi had a distinct statement saying that Twitter does not use political viewpoints, perspectives, or party affiliation in making decisions, we have other representatives from the Silicon Valley firms who are saying it is very clearly a left-wing industry. We understand it's a left-wing industry. So it seems to us, I think, natural that when so many of these circumstances add up together, it's hard not to immediately assume, well, this is distinct censorship, particularly when the facts are such, as they were with the Unplanned movie, that on opening weekend, on opening day, there is a blackout on a movie that's absolutely crushing box office anticipation. It closed fourth at the box office ahead of some pretty spectacular competition.
I mean, I've just never heard of movies, you know, like a big blockbuster of any kind, like Black Panther or something like this, having an account crash.
Right.
Or something like that, or, you know, DC Comics or Marvel or something. So, you know, I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of every, Twitter failing that ever happened.
Right.
But it just doesn't strike me as anything that we've heard about, right?
So Marsha Blackburn, who was, when she was serving in the House for the state of Tennessee, the sponsor of the Browser Privacy Act, and she has had really the notion of free speech and censorship on her radar for a very long time. So when, during this week's hearing, she had an opportunity to confront Carlos Monge of Twitter, she really wanted to be pointed when she brought this to her to the attention of Carlos after having pulled the ad for deeming it inflammatory. So let's listen.
Mr. Potts, should Facebook promote spirited debate on all sides of the political spectrum? And we'll do these as yes or no.
Thank you, Senator. Yes, we allow spirited debate on all
sides. Mr. Manji, same question.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Mr. Potts, should Facebook allow ads urging that we save sea turtles or baby seals?
I believe that would be fine.
Okay. Mr. Manji, should Twitter allow ads that denounce Planned Parenthood for selling baby body parts?
Ma'am, thank you for that question, and I'd like to again apologize
yes or no.
for you.
Yeah.
Every ad is judged.
Yes or no
context,
is good.
And we made a mistake on your ad, and I apologize.
Okay, Mr. Manji, should Twitter allow ads from Starbucks and Patagonia?
If they follow our terms of service.
And Mr. Potts, should Facebook allow ads from Chick-fil-A and Hobby Lobby?
If they follow our ads policies.
Okay. And who sets those policies?
There are teammates of mine. We have separate teams that work on ads policies.
Are they subjective?
They are meant to be objective, Senator.
They're meant to be objective. Do people bring their attitudes to work with them? Political attitudes to work with them?
I was incorrect in my statement. They are objective, and we try to strive for
people. Okay, Mr. Manji, should Twitter equally promote Democrats and Republicans in search rankings?
Yes, and we strive to.
Mr. Potts, same question.
Yep. Okay. Yes, Senator.
And Mr. Potts, should Facebook equally promote articles from all news sources, whether they're from the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post?
For those who, yes, Senator.
Okay.
So in the time that we have left, Chris, which is about a minute, answer a very difficult question as briefly as you can. Is censorship best addressed by a regulatory approach based on where we are?
I think it would be very difficult for the government to do this. But I think it's just a very tough question because you just have to look. If you look at what's going on in the FBI and the DOJ with all these sorts of things that are happening, you see the bias of the agencies and the people in them. You know, you're not necessarily going to get a fair shake from them, and it's going to be very opaque, right, about how the decisions are made. So it's better to engage people publicly, I think.
You are listening to Washington Watch. Chris Gasek, our senior fellow for regulatory affairs, has been my guest. Coming up, we are going to talk to an Alliance Defending Freedom senior counsel who is handling a new case in which, yet again, same-sex wedding ceremonies are taking front and center stage. We'll be right back. You're listening to Washington Watch.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host today, Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action. Well, all Steve and Bridget Tennis wanted to do was sell their produce at a local farmer's market in Michigan without being required to get into the business of same-sex weddings. They were hoping for an assist from Colorado baker Jack Phillips, a Masterpiece Cake Shop, a name you probably remember. Well, the Tennises, who make their home on Country Mill Farm with their six children, contend that their Catholic faith has been maligned by East Lansing officials who have sought to bar them from the city's farmers market over their refusal to host same-sex ceremonies on their property. Tennis, a second-generation farmer, and his family live in a 158-acre farm, which includes an orchard, a pumpkin patch, cider brewery, and they do host special events, including weddings, birthday parties, tours, etc. And it seems that the answer to a hypothetical question on Facebook drew the attention of the East Lansing, Michigan city officials, much to their chagrin. So joining me now to talk about the case in greater depth is Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel John Bursch and former Solicitor General for the state of Michigan. Welcome to Washington Watch, John.
Thanks so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So, John, let's rewind the clock a little bit today. So we know that there was a hearing today on Friday, but can we start out back in 2016 when the Country Mill Farm responded to a question on Facebook?
Yeah, it wasn't even a request to have a same-sex wedding hosted at the family farm. It was a hypothetical, what's your view on same-sex weddings at the farm? And the Tennises responded that because they believe in the Catholic definition of marriage as between man and one woman, that's something that they would be unable to do. And there was an immediate negative response from the city of East Lansing to that Facebook post. And your listeners need to understand that the family farm is in Charlotte, Michigan, 22 miles outside the city limits of East Lansing, where the farmers market takes place. And so the city officials were not trying to regulate something that was happening within the city borders. They were trying to attack the Tennises for their religious beliefs 20 miles away. And the Tennises and Country Mill had been going to this farmer's market for years. They were one of the most popular vendors. In fact, the city itself had posted on its own Facebook page that they were one of their favorite vendors. Everybody loves Country Mill, but not after they realized that they had the Christian view of marriage. And so the city booted them from the market, and the Tennises were able to persuade a federal district court judge at a preliminary stage to issue an order that allowed them back at the market for the remainder of the case. And so the hearing that was held today was to try to make that temporary order permanent.
And what was the outcome of today's hearing?
The judge took it under advisement. He said that he'll be issuing an opinion. But he asked some pretty tough questions of the other side and was pretty skeptical of some of the city's arguments. So, for example, the city attorney was trying to explain that when the mayor of East Lansing said that Steve and Bridget's Catholic religious views were not acceptable in the city, when other council members at the city were saying that their religious views were ridiculous and needed to be changed, that it wasn't really about their religious beliefs. And the judge was highly skeptical of that. He said, well, then how come they were using words like religious beliefs and Catholic in their public criticism? The city's attorney also made the outrageous claim that Steve and Bridget don't welcome members of the LGBT community to their farm. If you're a member of that community, you're out. That's completely false, because they welcome and serve everybody at the city of East Lansing farmer market, also at the family farm. But like Jack Phillips, they can't participate in all events. So, for example, they won't hold bachelorette parties at their farm. They won't do the really scary, gory, haunted house hay rides. And they can't have a marriage ceremony at their family farm that they and their children participate in that conflicts with their deeply held religious beliefs. And so really the case is one, as we know, that's really not just about the marriage context, but whether people with religious views should be treated like second-class citizens, whether the government should be allowed to pressure them to change their beliefs. And we're very hopeful that the judge will do the right thing.
Now, as the former Solicitor General for Michigan, this probably struck very close to home for you, and understanding that you, as a lawyer, have followed not only cases of this kind, but even at your own firm, at Alliance Defending Freedom, you were intimately aware of what the factual situation was in the Jack Phillips case. Do you find more hostility in this particular situation in East Lansing, Michigan, with the Tennis family?
Yeah, I think the situation here is even worse. Your listeners may recall that in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission had discriminated against Jack Phillips and the Masterpiece Bakery because of statements that some of the Colorado Civil Rights Commissioners made about his Christian views on marriage. Well, the record that we have here is much bigger than the one that they had in Jack's case. There they did it entirely on motion practice. And in our case, we had full-blown discovery. And so we took sworn deposition testimony, and the officials all doubled down on their ridicule and animus for Christian religious beliefs. One of the city witnesses said that just because something's in the Bible doesn't mean that it's true. Mm-hmm. And they repeatedly talked about how it was necessary to keep the pressure on the Tennises so that they could change their beliefs. So what happened to Mr. Phillips was absolutely terrible, but I think the evidence here is stronger yet.
Well, it is an ongoing debate. It is a course of discussion. It is probably not the last time that we will be hearing about ADF's efforts to protect the practice of religious liberty and constitutional freedom within the context of the same-sex wedding ceremony. In fact, the Tennises had insisted that, due in part to the fact that we serve everybody with dignity and respect as Christians, there's a lot of parallelism here between this case and the case in Colorado, because once again, we're not talking about denial of service. We are talking about a particular ceremony. Thank you so much to John Bursch, who is senior counsel at Alliance Defending Freedom. You can visit more information about his case, adflegal.org. You are listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I am Sarah Perry, director of partnerships and sitting in for Tony today. Well, coming up next, I will talk to an Arlington, Virginia public school mom who wrote a column in the Washington Post recently, insisting that parents have a right to determine what their children learn with regard to sexuality and gender. We'll be right back on Washington Watch.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action, and I am sitting in today for Tony Perkins on this Friday edition. Well, on February 25th, a friend of my next guest, Maria Teffler, and an Arlington public school parent inadvertently discovered a meeting the evening of a working group chaired with developing procedures to implement the district's transgender, gender nonconforming student policy. They attended as non-participating observers and were stunned with what they heard during the course of that conversation. And at that meeting in Arlington, Gender Identity Allies Advocate lamented that a planned reading of the book I Am Jazz, a storybook about a transgender student, had been scuttled at Patrick Henry Elementary School because of concerns over parents' reactions. Maria Keffler joins me now. She is a former middle and high school student teacher whose children are students in Arlington Public Schools in Virginia and was so incensed that she wrote an excellent April 5th column for the Washington Post. She joins us now. Maria, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So I'd like to learn a little bit about how you felt when you learned that the public school in which your children are attending was going to foist a transgender agenda on impressionable young students. And I think I can probably guess the answer, but I'd love for you to say it.
It was shocking. We found out about this policy implementation procedure being pushed through entirely by accident when a friend was looking around the APS website for some information about summer school, and she stumbled upon this link, which is buried three links deep on the website. We went to this working group meeting. All 12 or 15 people around the table were in agreement about these policies, and they're terrible. They push back Title IX protections for girls. They seek to curtail parents' rights to not only decide what and when to teach their children about sexuality issues, but also to keep them from even knowing certain things about their kids. This new PIP says parents aren't even allowed to find out if their children decide to change their gender status at school, and that's ridiculous.
Now, without batting an eye, you said that the children are being experimented on, and there is no cause for pause by any of these school officials. There is no hiccup or change in pace, but it is coming fast and furiously. And you talk specifically about the role of David Aponte, who's the co-chair of the local chapter of the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network. So talk to his involvement in this.
Well, he stated last year in an interview with the Washington Post that children in California and Northern Virginia are being experimented on, that our schools are being used as experiments for LGBTQ policies to see what happens. And that's really what it is, because there are not research studies to back up some of these affirmation-only approaches that they're trying to push into the schools. That is only one of many therapeutic approaches to dealing with someone with gender dysphoria. But this is the one approach that they're allowing, and that is what this PIP is all about. They're talking about it in terms of it being an anti-bullying PIP, but it goes substantially beyond anti-bullying. This PIP is a smorgasbord of bad ideas, and there's something to disturb just about everybody in it.
Now, you had four specific problems with Ashland Elementary's decision to promote this new transgender policy. The parents were notified less than a week ahead. There was no opportunity to opt out. They buried the book's topic in the middle paragraph, and the letter went out in English, even though you rightly point out there is up to 27% of Ashland students comprised of Hispanic and Asian backgrounds. So when you tell us that there were serious problems with this policy, you tie specifically right afterwards into what would happen if that draft policy implementation were adopted, and it's pretty scary. Can you mention some of those things?
Yeah. Just last night, we had a response to our FOIA request to actually see the policy draft. So I got that late last night. I've been looking at it today. No more protections for girls. If a boy decides that he wants to be a girl, he gets access to the bathrooms and the locker rooms, gets access to the girls' bedrooms on trips. If he wants to sleep in the girls' room, he can do that. No disclosure of gender status to parents. Now, there are two draft policies that I was sent last night. I'm unclear which is the most current one. One policy says parents may request to opt out having their children share a bedroom with someone of an opposite biological status. The other policy says only the students can opt out. The parents are not allowed to speak into that. So that's just a few of the things that are in the policy right now.
Maria, you rightly say that parents, not school systems, should hold authority over what their children learn about sexuality and gender and when. And speaking from experience as a former middle and high school teacher, you understand this from so many different aspects. You are also the founder of the Arlington Parent Coalition. Tell us quickly, if people want to get a hold of your website, where should they go?
They should go to, it's a long name, arlingtonparentcoalition.wixsite.com, arlingtonparentcoa.wixsite.com/arlingtonparentcoa.
We appreciate so much, Maria, parents like you. It is an encouragement to me, who has three in public school herself, to be mindful, to be watchful, to be an advocate for our children who are really so in desperate need of our leadership. You are listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. Coming up, I'll talk with David Horowitz, author of a new book, next.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan, and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachman. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony in this Friday edition. Well, David Horowitz grew up what he calls a red diaper baby in a communist community of Sunnyside, Queens. He is one of the most educated and storied individuals who had rather a surprising transition from hard left to middle right. He studied literature at Columbia, taking classes from Lionel Trilling. He became a new leftist, as he calls it, of the Soviet invasion of Hungary in 1956, did his graduate work in Chinese and English at the University of California, Berkeley. Yes, at Berkeley. And he was a member there at the university of a group of radicals who in 1960 published one of the first New Left guides, Root and Branch. In 1962, he published the first manifesto of the New Left, a book titled Student, which described the decade's first demonstrations, and then went on to publish a collection of Marxist essays. Now, where is he at this point? Well, he came to his senses, as we like to say, and is today a true conservative. In 1997, he published a memoir, Radical Son, about his journey from the left. And his newest book is called The Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America. It's an expose of the left's savage war against God and Christianity, with the goal of replacing God with progressivist, socialist, ruling deities of social justice and a new world order. Horowitz points out that the Christian principles were behind the guiding light of the American Revolution and the ideals bolstering the foundation of the American public, an increasingly unpopular opinion. David, it is an honor to welcome you to Washington Watch.
Well, thanks for having me.
First of all, congratulations on the rave reviews and on what I know has got to be an anticipated but nonetheless still very pleasing response to a much needed book. I want to read one of the particularly compelling reviews. Former Senator Tom Coburn said, David Horowitz has succinctly and wisely laid out the plans of the left to move our country away from the God-given right of freedom to practice our faith as our founders envisioned. Let me ask you a question as we start this interview. Was there a particularly defining moment for you that ignited in you the spark to write this particular book?
Actually, it came in a request from Chris Ruddy, the head of Newsmax. He thought it would be interesting, since I'm a Jew, an agnostic, and a former radical, to have my perspective on this. And, I think it's proved out. I'm an outsider. I've always had a great respect for the Bible and for religious thought. I don't think, you can have a book that's a bestseller for 3,000 years if there isn't wisdom in it. I think I also am pretty aggressive. I mean, one of the things about Christians is that they're too nice. I'm thinking in particular, I mean, this mayor from South Bend, Buttigieg, who's now the darling of the Democrats. I mean, as he would be, he's a shameless liar. He's a casual character assassin. What he did to Mike Pence is unforgivable. He should be driven out of public life for doing it. I mean, Mike Pence is probably as decent a person as exists in politics. He was always nice to this guy. And when this guy came out of the closet as gay and, he's got a male husband or wife, I don't know which it is. Mike Pence went out of his way, was the governor of the state, to praise him as a mayor, doing a great job as mayor. Actually, he hasn't done such a good job. South Bend is a mess, but that's just par for the course with Democrats. But it just shows that this guy now is accusing Mike Pence of being a bigot. He is the bigot. He is the person. And this is for the LGBTQ radicals. Not every gay person is guilty of this. But the persecution of Jack Phillips in Colorado, the persecution of Chick-fil-A, that's what they do. They are aggressors, and they need to be called out more for that. This is when I say Christians are too nice. I mean, my president would say an unkind word about the mayor Pete. I always feel guilty. Was sent as a former radical to teach conservative bad manners. but it's a street fight is the problem. And somebody has to, not everybody, I never encourage people to do what's outside their comfort zone. But people have to find a way of confronting them over this. And this is a very... The other thing about my book is it's an appreciation of the fact that America was created, 98% of the colonists who settled America and then created our country were Protestants. Every idea, every principle that we cherish as Americans, equality, inclusion, tolerance, these are all Christian ideas. They originated with Christians. And there's no way the United States could have been created by anybody except Protestant Christians, actually. It's one of the theses of my books. Also, just on this gay thing, and I'm saying probably a lot of your listeners wouldn't agree with me. I mean, I was always for gay civil unions rather than marriage. Because, it's the invasion of an institution that's existed for 3,000 years. But they're very aggressive. But I have a chapter called The Radical Epidemic. It's about the AIDS epidemic, which I did a lot of work on when it was happening. And these gay leftists, they don't believe in the laws of nature. They don't believe in the laws of the country either. They killed 300,000-400,000 young gay men by suppressing. They destroyed the public health system. They said it was homophobic. They put out Everett Koop, who was the Surgeon General. They had a $100 million education campaign, which was based on an absolute lie that AIDS was an equal opportunity virus. It wasn't. Mm. It was transmitted through gay sex in particular. Suppressed all the facts. Anyway, I think people will be certainly interested in that chapter. I feel that the Christian community has saved America, at least for this round, because they elected Trump. First, they elected Reagan in the wake of Roe v. Wade, one of the most atrocious court decisions in the history of the country. I mean, just invented a right to privacy. As William Rehnquist said in his dissent, there's nothing private about an abortion. Mm. I actually never thought I'd live to see the day when the Democratic Party would pass a law making it legal to kill a child that's already been born. But I beg everybody listening to this to let that sink in, that that's who these people are. They talk like they're compassionate, they care for the poor, they care for this, they care for that. No, they don't. These people are on a mission. They think that they're acting like gods. I mean, you know, the serpent in the garden said to Adam and Eve, if you eat of that tree, you shall be as God. Every progressive has that mentality, which is what makes them so dangerous. There's nothing that stands in their way that they won't try to destroy. And this case of attacking Mike Pence is a good example. He did nothing to provoke this. Nothing. And they want to destroy him as a bigot.
So, David, anyway, to what do you owe what seems to be particularly a flavor of the hard left, which is a type of intellectual dishonesty, right? So they plead discrimination, they plead marginalization, when in fact that's precisely what they do. And what they have done is narrow us down to the sole practice of our beliefs, our deeply held, longstanding Orthodox religious traditions, to solely the walls of our church and no further. Why are they not as apparently intellectually honest with themselves about what they're doing as we are?
They're liars from the get-go, because if they told you what their agendas were, people would reject them. They pretend to be socialists when they're communists. The Democratic Party is a communist party today. The Green New Deal, you can't take away just to pick one plank in the Green New Deal.
Right.
And how many, you know, gas consuming cars, how many do you think there are in the United States? 300 million? And they want to do it in 10 years. First, they lie to you and say the world is coming to an end in 12 years. Then they say you've got to get rid of your cars. You're going to get rid of 300 million cars. People will take an economic bath. They're attached to their cars. They already made the decision not to buy a Prius. You think you can do that without martial law? Of course you can't. And that's what they'll do. You have to understand, this is evil. This is the left, the progressives, they're evil. And the reason they're evil is because they think that they can be as God, that they can change the world. I mean, that airhead, Cortez, she doesn't even know what she's talking about. Yet she's remaking the whole country. There's nothing more dangerous than that. That's why progressives killed 100 million people in the last 100 years in peacetime, because they were in their way of creating the kingdom of heaven on earth. It all goes back to the Pelagian heresy. Pelagius was a Christian monk in the 4th century. And Pelagius believed, or preached, that sin was against human nature. So if people were true to their nature, they would be good Christians. And people could create the kingdom of heaven on earth without help from God. That's the heresy. And it was St. Augustine, who is the kind of godfather of modern conservatism, who said, no, we all share in Adam's sin. It's a sin of pride. It's the sin, you know, I mean, paradise was better than the Green New Deal. You didn't die. You didn't have pain in childbirth. But the condition for staying in paradise was you can't eat, you can't want to know evil and evil. But people, sin is integral to human nature. I mean, and every Christian and every Jew, you know, is Orthodox, knows this, that we're the problem. Society isn't the problem. That's what the left thinks. The left thinks people are good. If you're true to your human nature, you can have paradise on earth. If you're politically correct, and of course, if you're not politically correct, we're going to make you. We'll get the government.
we'll get it one way or the other, right?
Totalitarian. We're dealing with Nazis and communists, despite the appearance. When you just look at how they crucified Brett Kavanaugh because he was a man. Basically, that was his sin, being a man. These are very, very dangerous people. And, if I have one message for Christians, is that please recognize that and find a way to confront it. Don't excuse these people. There's no excuse. I mean, they're such hypocrites and liars. I can't get over the Democratic view, how pathetic it is, how transparently. I mean, you have Cory Booker saying we have to get rid of the bigotries in the Constitution. Now, this guy went to Oxford and Yale, so he has no excuse.
Right.
There are no bigotries in the Constitution. It doesn't talk about race. It doesn't use the words black or white. Because the founders, being Protestants, their doctrine was the priesthood of all believers. Everybody confronts their maker one-on-one without the intervention of a church or a state. It's perfect equality. That's why they didn't put in black, white, actually male and female words that don't exist in the Constitution. They really believed in this ideal that actually Martin Luther King articulated well, of judging people on the content of their character and not the color of their skin or their gender. But the Democrats are against that. It's a racist party.
So you have said to us, and I take this definitely under advisement, I hope our listeners do too, recognize the progressive radical left for what it is, identify their intellectual dishonesty, identify where agencies, governmental agencies, private actors are being used to effectuate a radical objective of, as you said, totalitarianism. And this is the stable of the regulars, from the ACLU to People for the American Way to the Human Rights Commission to the Southern Poverty Law Center. This is a book for our time more than many others. And I encourage our listeners to check it out. It is available everywhere books are sold. The Dark Agenda, The War to Destroy Christian America by David Horowitz, one of the most prolific writers and intellectuals in our time. Remind me again next time we will talk. We'll be in a few days, but follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins. Share this podcast, TonyPerkins.com, and we will see you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.